Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
This is the Midday 180.
Served up by Wendy's on 104.5 The Zone.
And today we're in Cool Springs, a Moments Beach Salon and Day Spa, and Moe's Original Barbecue. Join us for lunch. Grab that Christmas gift. Get something checked off your list this afternoon. 9050 Brothers Parkway is where you can join us. AmomentsBeach.com for more information. Crew's all here today. Mary Frances Hoots, our production assistant. Madison Blevins here for 104.5thezone.com. Kirby Allen Kirby makes the show happen for us on the road. David Reed, the chairman of the board. And Blake Bedingfield joins us live from Moe's Original Barbecue. Who he was saying one of his favorite stops. He loves the white sauce.
Love the dry rub wings.
Yes. Excellent. We know the order that Blake just placed.
That's right.
The dry rub wings. And look at the food in front of Chad Withrow right now.
The two recommendations I got were brisket, which I got, and the dry rub wings, which Blake got. So,
and then there was
he's on the money.
A nice lady who stopped by and said, try the smoked turkey sandwich, which Chad will be trying in about 2 hours.
Yes.
To which Hutton said, I'll have the salad with birdseed, please.
I was like, do you have a nice Cobb salad?
With smoked birdseed.
Brisket sounds great, but anything that doesn't have meat at this barbecue place, I'll take.
Blake, how bad has the tackling been over the last 2 weeks against this Titans offense? You know, all things being equal, how would you grade it?
I would say very poor. You know, and this is, it's kind of disappointing when you talk about the Jacksonville game, because they're notoriously a good defensive team with very talented players. But this past week, the Giants were just not engaged. You could see on a lot of the outside runs, the corners taking bad angles, what I would perceive as on purpose. And, you know, one thing that
What do you mean by on purpose?
You know, when you take an angle to a big running back, you're gonna shoot for the far hip, okay? Well, they were shooting way far away from that far hip, and what they would do is overrun the play and looking to get Derek to stop his feet and cut back and actually stop his momentum, which he wasn't doing.
So to let someone else make the contact.
No question.
To force him inside.
And Janoris Jenkins was probably the worst of that group in terms of the tacklers. You know, Curtis Riley, the safety, a former Titan, came in high a number of times. It wasn't that he was lacking the want to hit. He just had a poor tackling technique and coming in high on a big running back, which you don't want to do against Derek.
I'm just where have these tackle attempts been on him in past weeks, except for these last two? Like, he's trucking people now. He's running with a physical mindset. The offensive line doing the same. But he was very easy to tackle in the first half of the season.
You know, I think a big change is what you're seeing is you're seeing one defender in the hole. You're not seeing two defenders taking him down high, low, or both going low. He's now able to attack, whether it's on the perimeter of the defense or inside when he's running that inside zone play, where he's really attacking one defender. And a number of times the Giants actually dialed up a nice run blitz that should have been either a negative loss or a no gain. And, you know, Derek would use his stiff arm, which he's doing now, and get 3 to 4 yards on that carry. But when he's getting out on the perimeter of the defense, he's seeing one defender. And what is happening is he's using that stiff arm. Either the defender's going really low toward his ankle, and he's breaking those poor tackles, or they're getting stiff arm to the ground.
Blake Bedingfield with us. Paul, that brings up your discussion from yesterday about whether or not the formula that has worked over the last 2 weeks can work over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's kind of December football. You know, your running back and your defense, and obviously that's carried them the last 2 weeks. Do you think that can be a successful formula against Washington and Indianapolis, given what those teams bring?
You know, I think you're going to see a little bit of a different defensive front versus Washington. They're built more athletic on the defensive line, a little bit more powerful. The Giants' defensive line is not a good NFL defensive line. Now, Jacksonville is. So they ran for a high number of yards versus a good group there, but the Giants is really a poor personnel group across the front. They're built to play the run, but they're really not good run players. There's a kind of a rebuild situation going on in New York, but you know, when you're playing Washington, that's what they've been doing. They've rebuilt with a Daron Payne who plays nose tackle, who can get upfield with one gap penetration, but he's also strong enough to play both sides of the block, which is playing two gaps. Jonathan Allen, who's a one gap penetrator as well, but a very smart read and react player versus the run, and Matt Iadonis, who's kind of an overachiever athletically, but hard charging guy that is also good versus the run. But, you know, they're built a little bit stronger, a little bit tougher, probably more in that Baltimore mold that the Titans face than they are from this past week. But, yeah, they can continue to do what they're doing because they're getting into a rhythm on offense. You're seeing the offensive line, especially in this past week, firing off in the run game, not only getting onto the front level of the defense, but actually that second level, which is the linebackers. And you're seeing them get hats or at least walling off a linebacker, maybe not knocking him out of the way, but just getting enough on him where if the linebacker gets away from the offensive lineman, he's only getting a hand on Derrick Henry and Derrick's running through those arm tackles.
Quick roster move note, the Titans have promoted Kenneth Durden, who's been up and down, to the main roster from the practice squad to replace Logan Ryan, who's now on injured reserve, and they've added outside linebacker Jamel President to the practice squad. He's been there before. Back to Henry, one thing that struck me, Vrabel said that he kind of sees Henry getting almost more familiar with some of the runs, some of the tracks, almost the way he talks about Rashawn Evans recognizing things better, like Derek saying, oh, I've won the edge on this against a couple of guys, or the stiff arm's been effective on this. 3 years in, it seems maybe a little late. I know it's a new system and stuff, but you see that kind of stuff happening, and then when he's successful on that, obviously the confidence skyrockets.
No question. Anytime you change an offensive or defensive system, with Rashawn Evans, he's a rookie. You know, he had a little bit of the growing pains going through the rookie part, being injured in training camp. But when you're talking about Derek, he's switching offensive systems again, switching a different little bit of a blocking style on the front. You know, what I saw in this past week, and really in the past two, they're getting the ball to Derek a little bit deeper in the backfield, allowing him to get his shoulder square to the line of scrimmage before he gets up to speed. So when you have a big back like that, the defense would prefer his shoulders go toward the sidelines or at an angle toward the sidelines and not get those shoulders upfield. And that's what they're doing by handing the ball to him deeper in the backfield or pitching it to him either on a sweep on the outside or actually an inside zone run, which they're pitching the ball to him a couple of times, where they just, Marcus would turn right around, pitch it to him. Derek's getting up to speed quick, picking a one hole and creating yards. Whether he was creating yards through bad tackles, which happened a number of times in the Giants game, or if a good tackle happened, he was still leaning forward for three or four.
Well, and that's what I want to ask you about, because so much attention's being paid to him above the waist with the stiff arms and everything else. He looks different to me upon contact, the way his legs are churning. And I saw that a lot in this Giants game. Also, the second touchdown run where he sidesteps the defender and made it look really easy, that was some lateral movement we haven't seen from him in the past. Are you seeing some differences in how he's moving his legs in games also?
You know, I think to add to Paul's comment about getting more comfortable, you can see that. He's picking and choosing quicker than he was early in the season. What I mean by picking and choosing the hole he's going to run. If nothing's there, he's not hesitating and making two lateral cuts and trying to get upfield. He's making one and getting upfield and just going to get what he can. And a lot of times that's a 3- and 4-yard gain for him. You're talking about a bigger back that when he leans forward, and he always leans forward on contact, he's going to get an extra yard or yard and a half on contact, even if he's tackled properly. But if he's not, he's going to get that extra 3- and 4-yard. That's why the bigger backs are so productive if they're lean forward type backs.
Why have we not seen teams adjust to the Wildcat? Because they've shown that now in a handful of games this season.
You know, it kind of sneaks up on them. You see Marcus in the backfield, and all of a sudden Derek's back there, but they also run the reverse off of that as well, which has been effective. You know, you've got that, whether it was not Cameron Batson this week, but Taywan Taylor or Tajay Sharp. this past week, but they run the reverse, so that's, you always have that extra option to defend the edge of the defense and contain, and then when Derek can just pick and choose his hole at that point, it can be very effective. So, you know, you would think at this point they've run it so long that teams would see it and have a plan for it, but I haven't seen anybody really stop it yet.
Because teams did adjust to Miami at some point, right?
Whenever no question.
They brought that in.
Yeah.
And I just assumed that we would see a package where a defense would adjust when they saw that look, and it continues to work. I would, if I'm LaFleur, I continue to push that out there.
No question. I think 3 weeks ago you saw defenses start to take away the Titans' run game by really pinching inside and making Deion Lewis at the time, who was kind of getting the lead reps, make all his runs on the outside of the defense. And Deion's a quicker than fast back. He's an extra effort runner, but he's not going to beat anybody to the edge and to the sideline with his speed alone. And that's why teams were pinching in. Right now, they can't do that. Derek can get on the edge of the defense and outrun to the corner, and then he's hard to tackle if you're a defensive player. So the Titans have adjusted their offensive run game to counter what teams were doing against them 3 and 4 weeks ago.
Say Washington is more effective at rallying to Henry, tackle him low, have some success, turn him back to human. What's the plan B then for the Titans who've gotten comfortable with this, obviously, the last 2 weeks?
You know, this is a good defensive group from a personnel perspective. You know, they've been in behind in games, and they're playing catch-up at times on offense. But this is a pretty good personnel group. Inside linebackers, you have Mason Foster and Zach Brown, the former Titan. You know, both really good tackle-to-tackle players. Mason's probably a little bit better tackle-to-tackle. Zach has very good speed. You have Ryan Kerrigan on one end and Preston Smith on the other. Both big outside linebackers, pass rushers first, but actually strong against the run. These are the type of players that make it difficult to run on the inside in between the tackles. On the outside, you know, the corners are a little bit – Josh Norman is, I believe, overrated. He's overrated as a man cover corner. He was paid a lot of money to be a shutdown. He's just not that kind of player. He really wasn't in Carolina. At times he had flashes, but he's not a shutdown guy. And he can be exposed. He can be exposed by faster receivers. If you get a Taywan Taylor on him vertically, he can be beat. But also a bigger athletic receiver like a Corey Davis can give him problems as well. You know, the other corner is a little bit more of a height, weight, speed guy, Fabian Moreau. Not as really instinctive or has good ball skills. He's really a man cover, get in your face and run with receivers. So, you know, I expect the Titans, if the game is the run game is taken away, you have to work the middle of the field with an Anthony Firkser. I know Jonnu Smith's gone, but you have to do that. You have to work the screen game with Deion Lewis, and then you're going to have to take some vertical shots with Corey Davis or Taywan Taylor.
Discussing the matchup for the Titans against Washington, and let's first discuss this Titans defensive effort this past Sunday, the first shutout for the defense in nearly 18 years. Christmas night 2000 was the last time it happened. It's been a while, and the Titans did it Sunday by executing a great game plan against Saquon Barkley. How'd they do it?
No question. You know, you could see early on in the game that their attention was all about Saquon Barkley. Without Odell Beckham Jr. In the game, with him being inactive, it took away a lot of their outside threats. Sterling Shepard is a nice receiver, a second to third receiver on a good team, and he's a good complement to Odell. But when Odell's not there, they really don't have that extra guy. They didn't have the vertical threat in the rain and in the poor weather. But you know what you could see is I saw Jayon Brown in the game a lot. And he was stalking Saquon Barkley. Sometimes teams will spy a quarterback. He was spying the running back. And whether it was a pass in the flats or a screen or a run game, he was all over him. And he can match with his speed and quickness and athleticism. There was a pass to the offensive left out in the flats early in the game. And Saquon caught the ball. There were three defenders immediately corralling Saquon. It was Malcolm Butler, Logan Ryan, and Jayon Brown all there to give him either a no gain or a plus one gain on that play. And you could tell that their game plan was to eyeball him from the beginning. And they did an excellent job up front with the defensive line playing gap integrity. Gap integrity is if you are a two-gap player in this game and you're taking up two blocks, then the linebackers are running free. And you saw that a lot with the Daquan Jones, and even Benny Logan played a number of snaps in this game. And but Jarrell Casey is always going to demand extra attention because he can penetrate so quickly, whether it's in the run or pass game. But the defensive line did an excellent job, and the linebackers did a great job cleaning up Saquon.
Blake, I noticed you tweeted during the game on Sunday that the game was really simple in that the Titans tackled really well and the Giants did not tackle at all at times in that game. You mentioned the game tackling aspect of it on Saquon Barkley. What did you think, though, about the Titans' ability to tackle him one-on-one at times when they got the matchup and they had to bring him down? I thought they did a good job in those situations also.
I thought the corners did an excellent job. Dory Jackson, a number of occasions, had Saquon out in space, which is very tough. He's a 225-pound back with size, with ability to make a defender miss, and the ability to run by defenders. And Adoree did a good job of keeping balanced and tackling him around the legs. But I thought Logan did a good job. Malcolm Butler, Kevin Byard, really Kenny Vaccaro before he went out of the game did a very good job. This was a team effort on defense. I really commend the way they played Saquon, but really the way they attacked that running back.
I'm sure there are other spots I could see a drop off bigger, but Vaccaro to Kendrick Lewis just looks enormous to me. Hopefully he's out of concussion protocol by week's end. Short week though, maybe not. Talk about what we get with Vaccaro from the Titans and what they lose when he's out and Lewis is out there.
When you have Kenny Vaccaro and Kevin Byard on the field at the same time, they're interchangeable safeties. Both can play deep middle. Both can play the pass. Kendrick is not going to be as effective playing the deep pass. He's a little bit of a liability speed-wise. You saw that with the Chargers game when he was matched up on a slot and he was beat pretty bad on a deep touchdown pass. But Kendrick is a very smart player, savvy player. Those are intangible type qualities that still can be exposed on game day, especially when a team has enough time to prepare for him. He came in the game with Kenny out, and the team's really never adjusted. They weren't going to go vertical down the field with Eli or in this game anyway. So Kendrick made a lot of plays around the line of scrimmage. He made a lot of tackles, which he can do. He's more of a box player at that time. He's not going to cover a slot one-on-one. And so I would think if he shows up on the starting and Kenny Vaccaro's down or inactive, you're going to see an offense that's going to take advantage of that if the weather permits. But Kenny Vaccaro's played at a very good level, especially with Kevin Byard back there. Now you're going to ask Kevin to take a little bit more of a responsibility in the deep middle of the field, and he's not able to roam and be the playmaker that, as you saw on that interception where he came off his original coverage and made that pick later in the game.
Vaccaro with the concussion and concussion protocol. Blake, my thought is, if they can get through Washington with Kendrick Lewis on a short week, because you get Josh Johnson, right, at quarterback, can Washington exploit the weaknesses of Lewis but before you get to Andrew Luck and Indy?
You know, I think you have to. I think you have to take advantage of the weaknesses. And when you compound the problem with Kenny Vaccaro being out with Logan Ryan, now you have two holes that you're fixing in the defensive backfield. And they have to go that route. Even Josh Johnson, who's been there less than a month, he's going to have to stretch the field at times. You have a running back in Adrian Peterson that can run the ball. You have a beat-up offensive line with the Redskins, but you're going to have to attack. They're still playing for something. They're still playing for their own playoff berth. But you can't just be halted by the quarterback that you have in the back.
So with Logan now on injured reserve, is that one of the worst losses they could have had right now because of not having to narrow his focus or simplify things for him like they've done for others in this roster?
I think so. I think Logan has been a really good player for this defense this year. And what I mean by that is Logan is a smart player. He's always aware. He's very instinctive. He doesn't win with just athleticism alone. He's not a true man-to-man cover guy, but he can cover man. He can play zone. He's just a smart player, whether it's blitzing in the pass game, whether he's blitzing off the edge, playing in the box, in the cavity of the defense, in the run game. He's a very sound tackler, maybe one of the best on the team, at least from a secure standpoint where he gets runners down. You can see him controlling the defensive backfield along with Kevin Byard. Now, Kevin's that type player, too, to help out and line guys up, but he's a stable player. You know, I think between Logan and maybe Jarrell Casey, those are the two guys you didn't want to miss this year. Other players have been interchangeable. But now to say that, they do have the depth at that position. You know, LaShawn Sims is a good corner. He could be a number three corner for some teams, an outside corner only. He's not going to line up on the inside and the nickel, which does switch some things around for the Titans. You're going to ask Adoree to move inside in the nickel, which is going to take him on the outside or away from the outside and away from maybe a speed receiver on the outside. So, you know, LaShawn is going to have to up his game. He hasn't played a lot this year except on special teams, but he's going to have to up his game, and it's time for him to produce. But he is a talented enough player. You're not bringing in someone who's just a practice squad caliber player. You're bringing in a guy that can actually play corner.
So he's in base.
Yeah, that's the next question, is who do we see out there for base defense?
I think you're going to see Malcolm Butler, and you're going to see Adoree Jackson in base, and LaShawn will be your third coming in, but he's going to play on the outside.
Definitely outside corner.
He's only an outside corner. LaShawn Sims is. Adoree can play and has played nickel back before on the inside, and he's quick enough. Adoree's aggressive on his blitz and aggressive in the run game. That's not going to be a big drop-off. The drop-off is going to be what Logan brings to the team. He's an intangible guy. He's a smart, instinctive player that makes a ton of plays, but those intangibles is what this team's going to miss. Not only this week versus the Redskins, but definitely next week versus the Colts.
And Chad brought this up yesterday. Logan is one of, if not the best tackler on defense.
No question about it. And he's just what you call a secure tackler. He is a good wrap-up on the edge or in space tackler. He can play in that middle of the defense, and he's not afraid to play with all the trash that's going on the inside with the blocks. He's not afraid to play on the inside, and that's a credit to his game.
You worried about that with Adoree?
No,
in the slot?
I'm not. You know, Adoree's an aggressive player. Even though he's small, he throws his body around. He's never been afraid to come up and tackle. And, you know, I think Adoree, I don't think you're going to get a big drop off there. You just like to have that kind of that three-prong attack with Butler and Ryan and Adoree. And LaShawn's just going to have to step his game up.
This more likely means Butler against a better guy.
No question about it. And you're going to go back to who are you going to attack? Well, teams are going to see the new guy. They're going to attack LaShawn Sims probably. Is Butler going to get his opportunities? Yes. And you can stay away from Adoree. You can stay away from the middle of the field in the slot. So, you know, are they going to attack more on the edges? I would think so.
Blake, in this matchup, last week it was about Saquon Barkley. This week, is it all about Adrian Peterson?
I think a big part of it will be, I think you're going to need to take Adrian out of the game. Adrian is defying the age right now. He's a player that looked like a few years ago, he looked like he was done and then kind of reinvented himself. And I say reinvented his body. He's been healthy throughout the year. And when he's asked, he's producing. Adrian was one of the best backs in the league for a six-year run. And when you played him, he was tough, and he was the one that you were going to go after, and that's who you had to stop first. And he was a really dynamic player, one of the best, when I call say downhill runners, one of the best downhill runners with the ability to make defenders miss on the first and second level, and still run with power. He could get that first lateral cut and get the second step and go to full speed on that second and third step. He was really an amazing player. He doesn't quite have that juice anymore. You still see flashes of it.
We see some long runs from him.
No question, but you see his mind telling his body that he can still do it, and the body doesn't react quite the same as it did when he was in his prime, but not many people do.
Give an example at that age. How you noticed that.
So that second step speed, and when he makes a lateral cut now, he's getting up to speed on the fourth and fifth step and not that second and third. And that's what changes you from being a dynamic, explosive, burst-type running back and to being a longer speed. And he still has some long speed. I think he can still run well. It just takes him a little bit more to get up to speed. Still has the size and still has the power to get through the hole, though.
How is their line play?
It took a hit. It took a hit with Brandon Sheriff going out at the right guard. Sean LeVay went out at the left guard position. The center has been in and out. But the two right tackles, or the two tackles, have been fairly healthy. Trent Williams missed a few games early in the year. Trent Williams is an excellent player. He's as talented as anybody in the league and has been as consistent as anyone over his career. Morgan Moses on the right tackle side is a bigger, stiffer player. He's more of what you're seeing with the Titans out of Dennis Kelly. He's a cover-up, uses his size to engulf defenders, but can be beat by a speed rush around the edge, and definitely a combo rusher. If you have an inside-out pass rusher, he can definitely get off balance with his size. But Trent's the one you want to stay away from and attack Morgan Moses in the interior play.
In a league where everybody's afraid of Peterson, pretty bold by Washington to take a chance on him when they lost. Was it Geis?
Yes.
Who went down in the preseason. Pretty good return for them on taking a chance on a 30-plus guy that everybody thought was done.
You know, no question. I think this is a team that, you know, like you said, didn't really want to take a chance on Peterson. But they needed that person. They needed that player. You know, Peronje, the Oklahoma back, was injured and really wasn't the guy. Chris Thompson's more of a third down back. They needed a guy to carry the ball, and Adrian came in great shape, which he always is. And, you know, that was a guy that showed a little bit more life to him. They expected a lot out of Darius Geis, who got injured in preseason and was going to be a big back in that offense.
While we're talking the age of the running back who's performing well, we always discuss you hit 30 and there's just or 28, 29, and it's just you're downhill after that. Is there another position that you can put an age on the decline immediately, like we can running back?
You can see it at corner as well. You know, the hips get a little stiffer, the burst on your turn and run, especially in man coverage. You see a little bit more of that with the corners. Receivers can
be... Right around 30?
I think so. It's usually right around 30. They start to slow down. Receivers can reinvent themselves and be a little bit better route runners, a little bit more savvy, chain movers instead of the... And I'm talking about the vertical athletic receivers. You know, Randy Moss played into his 30s. He was just a go-get-the-ball type receiver his first half of his career, and then he kind of reinvented himself.
You're talking like the Mike Wallaces and the speed guys.
Yeah, the speed guys. You can actually continue your career by changing a little bit of the way you play. Now, the hands have to be there as a receiver, but as a corner, you will stiffen up a little bit, and, you know, you lose a little bit of the thump as a tackler, and especially that change of direction skills, which is so important for the position.
Can you ever see a delay in reaction time with a quarterback as they age? That's one thing that I always look for, but in terms of positions that you can age out of, certainly there are guys right now playing in the league that's showing that that's not necessarily the case at that position.
You know, and I think the rules have helped them. They don't get hit as much as they used to, and it definitely the hard hits. They're not exposed to that as much as they used to be. And even though a lot of quarterbacks in the older days played a long time, that is a position where relatively you stay pretty healthy. As long as your shoulder and your throwing arm is intact, you can play for a long time. But your feet start to go, the athleticism start to go. But, again, they're another position that reinvent themselves a little bit and become more of a pocket player. You saw Eli escape out of the pocket one time where an Eli in his late 20s, maybe 30, could have escaped and ran for a 5 to 7 yard gain. When he escaped out of the pocket, he kind of fell without being tackled at all. His legs just didn't allow him to do what his mind told him to do on that play.
Well, and maybe one of the more old man type plays you'll see from a quarterback is the fumble from Eli Manning where he couldn't shift hands to throw it away at that point and lost the ball.
You saw a lot of that in this game where Eli was just shying away from hits. He was falling either to his left, which is his non-arm side, and really just throwing the ball up for grabs a number of times. That's not something he would have done early in his career. You even saw it in the Patriot game. I saw it on the last play of the game where, you know, Tom Brady fell to his left anticipating a hit that wasn't coming because the outside rusher actually was picked up. He was falling away to his left. The ball sailed on him instead of stepping up, making a throw to Julian Edelman on that play, and ended up being an incompletion. That is a player that just didn't want to take that hit on that play. That happens a lot to older quarterbacks as they age.
Eli Manning, likely he's not going to get the money he's due next year. Joe Flacco is no longer the starter in Baltimore. Both guys could be on the market. Which player would you rather have right now if you're just trying to plug and play while you groom a young quarterback in the draft?
You know, I think it would have to be the system. And I don't mean to cop out on the answer there, but it's what system are you running? If you're going to run a ball control run oriented offense with short to intermediate passing, I would take Eli Manning. If you have more of a vertical threat offense down the field, I'm taking Joe Flacco because he's not afraid to air it out. But if you want more of the, and I'm talking about, let's just say Jacksonville's going to be looking for a quarterback. They have Tom Coughlin, obviously, the connection there. But that's what they're built to do. They're not a vertical threat offense right now. They don't have those receivers. They're more of a running game and short intermediate passing, and he would be much more effective in that system than a Joe Flacco would, who likes to air it out a little bit more. So both of them are going to be picked up. Teams are going to want them, especially if they're going to compete for next year. And if Jacksonville keeps the same personnel, then they're going to try to compete again.
What about Washington?
You know, Washington's another one. They need a quarterback. Alex Smith looks like it's going to be a long rehab for him, even if he does want to come back.
Is that a Manning offense?
That is not as much of a Manning offense. What they want to do in that offense, they like to take shots, but they're going to stretch the field a little bit more. In that intermediate range, Joe Flacco would probably fit that offense a little bit more. Even though Alex Smith ran it to perfection, and Alex Smith can be but Alex Smith is a little bit more athletic than those two quarterbacks. But the drafting of Darius Guys, Chris Thompson, Jordan Reed, Josh Doctson, you know, Crowder, the receiver, those are guys that it's a little bit of both. They can play short to intermediate, but they really want to stretch the field as well.
I know you don't know those guys this way, but perception for us would be that Eli would be the better guy dealing with a young draft pick. You have the same sense?
No question. You know, it's I don't think Flacco really had the personality where he's not going to help. I've heard rumors that he's not willing to help. That may have been more of a ego bruise thing, that they drafted a quarterback high to take his spot. That happens at times when you anticipate a veteran quarterback coming in and teaching your rookie. He just wasn't ready to give that up yet, and that's okay, but you've got to know that ahead of time with a personality. But Eli may not either. Eli's a very good person, but he may not be really willing to shadow and teach the young quarterbacks.
Blake Bedingfield is with us. Coming up, we'll discuss the matchups to watch, specific one-on-one battles that we may see on Saturday from Blake's perspective, and take another look at Washington. And think about this. They're on their fourth starting quarterback, and they are squarely in the mix for the wild card race in the NFC on their fourth quarterback. Consider if Blaine Gabbert played for the Titans, the second quarterback option for this team.
Yeah.
Washington's quarterback number
four. And who would 3 and 4 be?